paper 21, section 5, which is old single column, page 240. All right. It's paper 21, section 5. Before we get started on this, the intro is going to be a little review that'll serve as a to get us spun up again. Where if you look down in this section, notice there's a list of three there that's playing off of that list of seven that we went through. And if you just flip back to section three, you know, towards the end of section three, that second list of seven that's in section three, item number seven, you know, so in other words, the second to last paragraph of section three. Let's review all of the content that's embedded in that one little paragraph there to get us spun up again on where we're supposed to be as we, you know, begin to read what we're going to read tonight. So let me just take it a sentence at a time there. So to achieve new and higher relationship with the Supreme Being. Okay, now do you remember what the context is here? You know, back at the beginning of the list there, it says the technique of obtaining supreme sovereignty over a local universe involves the following seven experiential steps. Okay, remember that? What was going on, that as we looked at that list, we saw a pattern, a lot of pattern in it. We saw the creature, creator, unifying deity pattern, you know, that label for supreme type deity. Creature, creator, unifying. We saw that repeated twice. And then we also saw, overarching the whole list, the power personality synthesis expression. So we had two things in play, creature, creator, unifying, and power personality synthesis. And when we got to item number seven, that's when we recognized that they were bringing that power personality pair, the two sets of three before that, together into a synthesis, item number seven. And so you start out with that first sentence, to achieve new and higher relationship with the Supreme Being. The Supreme Being is the power personality synthesis of the total finite. Of the total finite. If he's the power personality synthesis, you know, past tense, you know, like we've said so many times, the Supreme Being as a direct individual that you can walk up and engage is not experienceable as a finite fact. It's a transcendental being, an absentite fact. So, when they say to achieve new and higher relationship with that power personality synthesis, with the Supreme Being, we're talking about a creator son, becoming a master son, and achieving supreme sovereignty, of achieving a new and higher relationship with a transcendent fact. Okay. Two things just to think about. That are sort of corollaries of that statement. One, remember when we've talked about the ultimate Trinity? You have three groups of beings whose deity, you know, the superadditive consequence of their collective deity is the ultimate Trinity. You have the supreme creators, of which a master son, of course, is amongst. The supreme being, and the architects of the master universe. Okay. So a new and higher relationship, well, that's the very direct expression of that relationship. It's in the ultimate Trinity. that relationship they're talking about exists. You know, that relationship in its full, you know, multidimensional character, is the ultimate Trinity. Okay, so that's one thing that you can recognize that and he's achieving that long before the grand universe is settled in light and life. He did it 2,000 years ago, our Michael. So in other words, there already is an ultimate Trinity. There already is a supreme being. And obviously, you can't achieve a relationship with something that doesn't exist, but it doesn't exist from a finite temporal point of view. But from a transcendent, from a bottom-up point of view, but from a transcendent top-down point of view, yes, there already is a supreme being and an ultimate Trinity, and that's why Michael can have said relationship. So, you know, just to appreciate, to just say that there's that relationship means that Michael has achieved a manifestation coming off from paradise with all of these latent potentials that he has coming from the Father and the Son. Remember how we talked about he's, by and large, just a potential as he's brought into existence and he's slowly actualizing. They used the D with a small d on the deity when they talked about it. Okay. He's here achieving some sort of a more top-down expression, in a sense, to have this relationship. Okay. And when you go to the... before I go on, that's right. One more thing. Remember, there's two things. I said there was two things that I want to bring up there. The other thing is, let's say, what's another way we can understand how he could have this relationship when, from our perspective, that's not possible yet? It's almost like he's short-circuited the time it's going to take all of us experientially to get to that point. Well, we all know that's one of the things that is proper, in a sense, for a creator son to do. A creator son has the right, the liberty, the non-rebellious liberty to skip the normal evolutionary steps if he sees fit. He can just jump from, point A to point Z and skip all the letters in between if he wants. Rather than having it go through all the normal time constants of an evolutionary process. If anyone else tries to do that, like Lucifer, that's rebellion. If you try to skip any of the normal amount of time that it takes to go through a certain process. Because that amount of time is the Father's way. But he's got the Father in him. So, in a sense, the Father has delegated an out to the overarching Father's way. Occasionally, a Creator's Son, in his name, can skip the normal steps. So, you see, that's one way we can understand what he's done. He's having a relationship with the Supreme Being before all the rest of us have gone through this very, very multi-trillions of years process it's going to take to get the grand universe settled in line life. He sort of skipped all that time and just jumped right to a relationship. Okay, so those two things to think of there. But so you have this relationship with the transcendental He, the Supreme Being. And then what do they say is the consequence of that skipping to the end and establishing a relationship and essentially pinging the end point? It's going to ring back into the finite. The repercussion, strikes back into the finite from that transcendental point. The repercussion of the totality, see, again, reminding you, the Supreme Being is expressive of the totality power personality synthesis. So any repercussion coming from the Supreme Being is going to innately be a totality expression. The repercussion of the totality of this creator-creature experience, and remember we talked about that, you can see, whereas someone coming up is doing, like the creator son is doing creature-creator, the reflection of that in this transcendental being is creator-creature. Okay, so he's having that experience with the supreme being, that creator creature. So he's having a creator creature experience. So the repercussion of the totality of this creator creature experience augments the super universe reality of God the Supreme and the time space sovereignty of the Almighty Supreme. Let's take that much first. Two things. Well, what paper are we in here? Paper 21. We're a long ways away from which paper? Paper 117. All right? We know that at this early stage, when they want to suggest, if you're ready to look at it, you know, in a bigger perspective, that you bring in the mother, they don't say the Supreme Being, they say God the Supreme. Remember, Ali? We've noticed that that's what they're doing in this early stage. So when they say the super universe reality of God the Supreme, on the one hand, and the Almighty Supreme on the other, it's like, well, I mean, I know what this pair is. I have the Supreme Being as a transcendental He. If that redounds back into the, I shouldn't say redounds. If that, you know, this just repercusses. If that repercusses back into the finite, there's no singular He in the finite. It's a twofold. There's a She and an It. He looks like She and It in the finite. Here's the two things. The super universe reality of God the Supreme is God the Mother. Or if you want to think about the individual, the universal mother, and the time-space sovereignty of the Almighty Supreme, the It. Okay? Now, let's think about it. What exactly do we mean by that? Now, we're talking about, in that first one, we're talking about the mother deity, the mother-type deity. And notice how they don't say the grand universe reality. So in other words, not the mother type deity in that biggest of wombs, the grand universe. But they don't say local universe either. They say super universe. Okay. Remember that when you start to think about mother deity, think about you have mother deity spanning the whole vertical hierarchy. And its fundamental quality of deity is unity. It's not broken up into chunks in the vertical hierarchy. It's a continuum throughout the whole hierarchy. And it expresses within individuals. If you look at it from an individuality viewpoint at any given level, you can see some of that mother deity shining through an individual at a given level, like a creative mother spirit, that mother deity shining through there. Reflective mother spirits, mother deity shining through there. Mm-hmm. Super universe. Okay, we're talking about the reflective mother spirits. And remember what happens when he pours out the spirit of truth. You're talking about him becoming a master son. When he pours out that spirit of truth, it's more than just poured out upon the mother deity of the local universe, mother spirit. Because when I leave, when I graduate from this local universe as a first stage spirit, I still can tune into the spirit of truth that tells me in the book. It's poured out upon the whole super universe, and the local universe is within the super universe. It's poured out upon the super universe expression of the mother deity and the reflective mother spirits. Okay? So, but notice, there's been a downstep. It started out, it said, the repercussion of the totality. You had the Supreme Being can only engage a total, but it's not a relationship to all master spirits. It's just a one. And so there's this qualification that basically Michael is introducing into the relationship. Not the Supreme Being, he can't so qualify. But it's such a true relationship that Michael has now with the Supreme Being that the fact of Michael qualifies the totality expression of the Supreme Being, and it only repercusses in the super universe that particular Master Son, or think about our Michael, that our Michael is in, the seventh super universe. it's only in that footprint of the mother, not creative mother agencies and agencies of days. It's not going to be in a footprint that is at the collective super universe level, down a notch. So that's what that's expressing. See, and then the time-space sovereignty of the Almighty Supreme. Remember when they call them Supreme Creators, they're, literally, they're creating part of the Supreme. Which part? The Almighty part. That flavor of deity, the Almighty, is a collective consequence of the fact of the Supreme Creators expressed on the Supreme level. As this part of the Supreme called the Almighty. So that aspect of it, you think of very directly as the very fact that he's a Supreme Creator, especially now he's a Master Sun Seal, he's really a Supreme Creator. Okay, so that's what they're getting at. They're just pointing out that the transcendental he is going to express as a she and an it. The it part is the whole Almighty Supreme. So it has a whole grand universe footprint to it. That's just sort of the universal providence, sort of presence, lowercase p. And then the mother part gets, see, as they say, it augments. You have that mother deity is more manifest and experienceable than it was before as a consequence of a Michael becoming a Master Son, but just in his super universe. And then specifically, do you remember 2,000 years ago, our creative Mother Spirit, in the wake of him becoming a Master Son, became more personal, personally experienceable, or more experienceable as a person, maybe I should say it that way. More, you can experience the fact that she's a person now more than you could prior to 2,000 years ago, so that even we'll be able to experience her personality now. What allows her to have a personal expression? It's not the spirit-type deity in her. That was it. It's the mother-type deity in her. And so the more that mother-type deity is manifesting in the finite, it augments here, like I said, it augments the manifestation, the more personal the expression of our creative mother spirit.
Yeah. I don't like the idea that the ultimate evolution of she is he. I don't like the idea that the combination of a genderless thing with a she creates a he. I can't get my mind around the fact that she becomes he and that they are the same thing.
It's just, it's in the higher sense. You can't.
I want them to change that for me.
Well, you're going to have problems with that. What we have, we're recognizing that God, functioning. In a mother-like expression, is a distributed expression. God as a father is a point-like expression. God functioning as a father. God throws out, in a dragnet sort of over a domain. That's the mother. And the mother focalizes that whole domain and completes it. So God finishes functioning as a mother at that on that in that range throughout that scope of a domain. But there's an eternity. I mean, the mother deity never stops functioning. There's an infinite amount of focalizing that has to occur, and it's going to take endless cycles of eternity to do it. They'll always be a mother, but at each level, there comes a time when the mothering job is done at that level. Even the fathering job is done at that level. I mean, the supreme being doesn't go on forever being the he for the finite domain. The finite ceases to be. There is no more mothering or fathering of the finite left to do. And by he, you mean now. See, once the grand universe is settled in light and life, now the supreme being is just another localized person in a gigantic God the Mother domain. He's just another part in a incredibly huge whole, you know. Initially the first outer space level, you know, which makes the grand universe look like nothing. You know, so in a sense, you know, he becomes almost insignificant in that greater scope. You know, in the same way that we're ascending sons. You know, we use the he to indicate a relationship to the Father. In other words, a fact that's been localized by the deity of the individuality of the parts, the Father. The Father has achieved in coalescing and localizing everything that can bottle up a fact called the finite. And then you're done with that. It's not that, that somehow you have a morphing of personality. There's only one personality, and it's neither male nor female. None of us has a male or female personality. Our personality is not sexed. Our selves are different. So that's all we're talking about. We have a she-like self, and then when it coalesces, it becomes a he-like self. Well, you're doing the same thing. You've already begun to leave behind your she-like self expression, and it's been focalized, and you're going to go on for the rest of eternity as a coalesced he-like self with the exact same personality.
Do you think this is partially a problem that they express in the very beginning with the limitations imposed upon them by the English language, that these gender pronouns of he and she, I think, just trip us up throughout the entire book?
But they don't have to. They certainly will if you don't master them. You have to become the master of the pronouns. You can't let the history of those pronouns be the master of you. The main thing is what I was just pointing out, is that it's been revealed to us now that the pronouns he and she describe a self, not a person. We've falsely aggrandized those pronouns into some eternal personal word. They're not, they're telling us. That is a false use of those. They designate a type of self, a she-like or a he-like type of self. And personality has nothing to do with it. You know, and as much as we say, well, I want my personality to be male or female, personality only comes from one fact. So it doesn't have a twofold character. It only comes from the infinite one. Not the infinite two. So it only has one flavor, and it's not he or she. It's transcendent of he and she. It's above, you know, the personality comes down from above the self and identifies it. It's transcendent of self. It's greater than self. It's greater than he or she. The fact that it's from the infinite one, you know, or the first source, which is actually deeper, is behind the universal Father. See, it's transcendent, where that personality is coming from something higher than the universal Father. The universal Father reaches back deeper into something that transcends himself, and he's just, you know, the delivery system.
I think that you know, you think of personality like a pattern. I make an address. Here's a pattern.
Right, and the thing that you want to understand, if you look at the way the word personality is used in the Revelation, it's used in two ways. One, it's used as an existential way as a direct factual description of what the Father bestows. And two, it's used as a shorthand for personalized self. Instead of saying personalized self all the time, you can just say personality. But you have to remember which way it's being used. The personalized self is male or female originated and forever colored. See, so if you use the word personality as a shorthand for personalized self, there's a male or femaleness to it, even as a finaliter. But if you use the word personality to just describe that pre-identified with a self fact, that thing that came, that was individuated out of the first source, that was in the universal Father's hand before it was dropped on you, that has no sex differential. And that's the main thing that the relators are trying to get us is to allow for the recognition of that differential, to not blur those two uses of the word personality together. It's like, well, why did they ever use the word personality for two different things then? What do they say at the beginning and the foreword? They're going to write it in a way where there's more or less distortion of meaning and potential. It's like, well, why make it so that I could have more distortion of meaning? Why not, you know, write it so that that isn't so possible? The whole point is the only way to discover truth is if you take delight in cultivating. There's nothing straightforward about truth. And they're trying to actually encourage that by constructing the book in such a way that it has a binary potential when you open it up. You're going to get one of two things out of it as you study it, truth or error, and nothing in between. And it's your choice, because everything is your choice. And the choice is always binary. It's either eternity or oblivion. And there's no in between. Part of that is just teaching us that lesson. So, I mean, when we say the Supreme Being is a he, this is a very interesting kind of a he from our perspective. This is a he that has countless trillions of years of experiential knowledge of being a she. The Father has no experiential knowledge of being a she, universal Father, and never will, can't, purely existential deity. The personal spiritual aspect of the Supreme Being comes from where, does it say?
Trinity.
In the Paradise Trinity, the origin of she. He will be a localized fact, he'll be a he, but in terms of our more experiential understanding, that will be, he will be like a finaliter that started out as a female on a mortal world. And there is no complement to the Supreme Being that started out like a he. There's only one being that manifests a total finite, and it's rooted in a she fact, not a he fact. I'm the one that should be offended, not the women. I'm getting the short stick, it appears here. What about a being that's on the same par as the Supreme Being that didn't start out she-like? There is no such being. Okay? It's only shape. And that's what one of the things we're trying to really get at in the beginning of this. What's going on in the experiential universe of universes for now and forevermore is a paradise trinity originated phenomenon. It is dominatingly she. Okay? I mean, the fifth epoch of Revelation completely turns the whole male-female thing on its head. I mean, but if you bring your bias of the history of this planet and how men have dominated over women, if you bring that into your engagement with this, it looks like it's nothing but male-dominated language. Mm-hmm. That would be error.
I don't see it.
See, when I see it that way, I've chosen to seek and find error. The truth of the revelation, what is so controversial as we know, is what we've started to talk about. Fundamental recognition that by and large what's going on here is a she-dominated phenomenon. The mother influence dominates the growth of the soul throughout your entire local universe career, not the father influence. Havona, the central universe, wow, that must be a father-dominated place. No, that's the Paradise's Trinity place. Father's not allowed, in a sense. She's the foundation there. It, the Paradise Trinity, and the she that comes from it, is the foundation there. The creatures there, Havona natives, are Trinity origin, not Father origin. So that's what we're fundamentally getting at, is trying to get beyond the initial tension that we have, and those that have to humble themselves the most, it turns out in the end, are the males in the room. And going forward, the truth of the fifth epoch of Revelation is going to have the biggest problem with the men on this planet, because it's challenging their dominance for the first time. A dominance that's predicated on four epical revelations that couldn't yet reveal anything about the mother. They could only reveal the father because we were too primitive. And we're barely not too primitive now to even recognize that this is the first epical revelation of God the Mother, and that changes everything.
Yeah. I see it as, I see the fifth epic revelation to simplify issues of this nature, and this is not the only issue that needs to be dealt with. It's the old wineskin being replaced with a new wineskin. You have to be able to adapt your perception of what you understand to be fact as crap. In other words, that's extreme. But let's say we have to change our vision. We have to recognize this is a revelation that is to change from the old wineskin to the new.
And all of us have a little thread of truth with a big wad of error wrapped around it. And the step one with the fifth epical revelation is facing that fact and adjusting it to the ideal that, you're innately divine or something, that tendency like we've talked about, which comes from too much father in your worldview. It comes from too much existential deity in your worldview. Great humility is much more natural when you begin with experiential deity. And just one of the things that's so difficult, because it's so time honored, no matter how much we try, we're bound to initially try to interpret it anthropomorphically. The moment that I say God the Mother, someone's wanting me to appoint to Venus standing in the room somewhere. Okay? There is no such thing. That there is no point located she that is God the Mother. She is an individual, but she's an individuality of the whole. She's not the individuality of a part. A he-like fact. Here's a little part, and it has an individuality. You call that a he. Here's a whole, and it has an individuality. You call that individuality a she. It's the flavor of the individual. Is it he like or she like? Is it a whole or a part? You know, and just when I say it that way, part, that's, I think, is less than a whole. Who is getting the short straw? The part or the whole? You know, again, that's the irony, that when all is said and done, the mother idea turns everything on its head. It just changes the whole way you think about the difference between those two individuals. It's actually it's easy to get confused because it's like, well, there's a part and there's a part, and we call one a she and one a he. That's not the truth.
They're both
parts. Right.
They're sons.
And the, the fact that there is a hole there, but it's kind of hidden, and it's very temporary. For a brief period, that individual can be a womb. Can be, that womb is the entire universe for one little child. It's just like, unless it's twins, okay, or triplets, okay? It's just like the wombs in the greater universe. The creative mother spirit is giving birth to a multiple birth. It's spread over a long span of time. The difference between when the first, sibling is born and the last is a lot longer than the distance between when the two twins are born, okay? But it's all one birth event, spread out over trillions of years of time in one womb. There's no resemination. This is one. And all the children come out of the one womb.
Okay.
Yep.
Two things. Mm-hmm. One is that the Creator Son has to get permission from the Infinite Spirit to build anything that's energy matter.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's the impersonal. Now that Infinite Spirit, as soon as it becomes a mother, they decide to have offspring, all of a sudden she coalesces, she vocalizes, and she has now become the Universe Mother Spirit. Before that, she was the Infinite Spirit, and she was actually
just a creative spirit.
No, the Infinite Spirit.
She was the localized expression of the Infinite Spirit.
Yeah, she was the localized.
Called a creative spirit, yeah.
Okay.
That's what you mean by creative spirit.
What I'm trying to say is she didn't become a mother until she didn't become the creative mother spirit until she was a mother.
Until she
was
came into relationship with the Trinity.
Well, it says that she focalizes he has a relationship with the Infinite Spirit until they have children, and then she becomes a mother.
Right.
She's a womb for a short for a period of time, and then you don't want to be a womb for the rest of your your universe career. You're more than a womb.
Anyway, you got something too?
He's good.
You got something? Okay. Well, we may not even get to read tonight.
I wanted to sit here anyway.
It's a nice cool spot.
Yeah, it is.
Steve, go for a second.
No, go ahead. You had your hand up.
Well, when I was younger, I wanted to be a father. But to be a father in truth and not just spelled,
not just in fact. Yeah.
Absentee father. Yeah. I had to do it by developing a relationship with a woman. It was humbling to, because I was incomplete, by myself.
Yeah.
So I had to humble myself to have a relationship with a woman. And I think it's going to be a similar experience in order to fuse. Now we think of the gesture as a father fact. But in truth, I think we have, the way we fuse is by
coming into relationship with the whole. Mm-hmm. So it's a similar experience.
Mm-hmm.
We have to humble ourselves to coordinate with the whole, and that's what we'll achieve.
Not only the fusion, but that's what,
the individual fact.
That's what achieves every single step of growth of any kind. It's only when you let go of yourself and allow the mother to grow you that you grow, or anything. You don't evolve yourself, you're evolved. The only thing that you can do is falsely use the gift given to you by the Father to prevent the mother from acting. You can hold on to yourself with what the Father gave you. And if you do that, it's to your end. Every step that's genuine growth is a humbling step. The doorway to anything that's real is through humility and patience. Fundamentally patience, because it's a temporal God that's going to grow you, not the transcendental God. There is not going to be a fiat thing. You're going to need patience, but you will be grown. But only if you don't misuse the gift given to you by the Father and cut yourself off from the mother. But again, you know, just the very fact that you have the expression God the Father, God the Son, God the Spirit, God the Supreme, God the Mother, God the Sevenfold, etc., etc., etc. There's one God. Those are the unity viewpoint designations. There just is one God. And that one God is not a he or she. It's not a sevenfold. It's not a son. It's not a spirit. It's not a supreme. It's not an ultimate. It's just God. It's greater than father or mother. That one God circumscribes itself to be God the Father. That one God circumscribes itself to be God the Mother, to be God the sevenfold. Those are all facets of the whole. Right? So, you know, and, you know, God is personalized deity. Again, remind, see, personalized, that personality thing, that fundamentally, not personalized self, but just personality, is way transcendent of he or she. It's transcendent of father, mother. It's transcendent of father, mother, sevenfold, supreme, ultimate, absolute, son, spirit, and everything else you can think of. Okay? It's greater than any of those things. Okay, so if you remember where we had, you have something to do?
One more thing.
Okay.
Okay, I'm sitting here, right? My internet's off completely. The minute you start talking about God,
mm-hmm.
my screen flashes on this.
Uh-huh.
It's a thing about God on Truth Book. And so I guess I'm supposed to read this one little quote.
Okay.
I don't know what happened. I'm just sitting here looking at it. And my paper's gone, so. It says, of God, the most inescapable of all presences, the most real of all facts, the most living of all truths, the most loving of all friends, and the most divine of all values, we have the right to be the most certain of all universe experiences. The Arantia Book, paper 102, 710.
Yep.
Okay. I don't know why it popped up.
The power paper, remember.
To
the 100-megawatt paper.
So it seems to me like this whole thing we've been talking about mm-hmm. might provide a basis for a better understanding of the whole phenomenon of people expressing themselves as gay or lesbian.
Right, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's...
I don't know what he said, because you said something right in the middle of it.
Okay, I'll say it again. I said,
I can't hear you.
The whole thing we were talking about, I thought, provides maybe a way to better understand why we have some people that are gay or lesbian. So I think they're maybe more in touch with the personality part as opposed to the expression part, and they're not letting that get in the way, and they're just... love with the person, regardless of the expression.
Certainly that, and then think about how you take that personality fact and express it in self terms, in the spirit of what you're thinking. You have a whole spectrum of selves. On the one end, you have selves that come in definitive dual pairs. And then you back off a little bit, and they're still paired, but not as definitively. You wouldn't call them male-female. They're not that definitively differentiated as selves. You might call them positive-negative, you know, like angels and stuff. Okay, you know, and we certainly see that pattern in some humans, where, you know, it has more of the positive-negative angel-like pair expression. And those pairs find each other, and they want to spend their life together, just like angel pairs spend their lives together. You back off some more, and the pairing disappears totally, and then it's just individuals. And then, see, as you... That's what you have. You know, you start out at the father where you have just this singular personality fact, and it produces just, you know, monothetic individuals. But as you begin to move away, it starts to express in dual form. Okay. And so, you know, we have this whole spectrum. And is it surprising that we might see shades of that sort of vertical structure in the world around us, that we wouldn't just see the flatlander point of view, you know, just the bottom expression. You know, and in a sense, we're not as definitively separated into male and female as a material son and daughter. They're the material son and daughter are the ones that are completely at the far end of the spectrum. They're the most definitively separated. There's just no overlap. I mean, the male and female that are sitting there, there's some overlap, you know, so that if one dies, you know, as a parent, the other one can take up some of the slack. When you take it all the way to the end point, material son and daughter, there's no overlap. They're completely separated, individuated into this dual expression. And so they're hence totally dependent upon each other to have any holistic perspective. They're just completely lost without the other. They have no ability to substitute for the other's, you know, point of view at all. And so if one falls, you know, the other's doomed. There's just no way they can stand on their own. You know, so they're the most definitively. You know, we're actually, see, a little bit backed up, and we're just noticing there's some that are even a little bit more backed up and a little bit more like angels, and, you know, and it's a whole spectrum. That is the universe that's been revealed to us. It isn't simplistically just male and female. That's just the end point, that it's simplistically male and female. okay, so meanwhile, back to item number 7 in section 3.
Sentence 3.
So that's, yeah, right, exactly. So when all is said and done, what we see we have there is it's stating that this repercussion from the transcendental supreme being into the finite augments, is the word they use, augments the manifestation of the mother-type deity in the finite and augments the manifestation of the almighty-type deity in the finite. Those two flavors of deity now have more quantity to them, as it were, you know, more manifested fact to them in the finite. Two things that weren't there before, this augmented part of each. There's a superadditive consequences of the relationship between those two. You take the mother-type deity, the almighty-type deity, the superadditive consequence of the relationship is called the supreme-type deity. There's going to be more of the supreme-type deity manifesting in the finite. Well, where does it squeeze out? You know, does it manifest through an individual? Yes, you read it, and factualizes the supreme local universe sovereignty of a paradise Michael. So we see more mother type deity coming out of when our Michael son became a master son. We see more mother type deity manifesting out of the reflective mother spirits of this super universe. We see more mother type deity manifesting out of our creative mother spirit. We see more almighty type deity manifesting in the whole grand universe. Because that's a god, the sevenfold thing, so it ends up being spread. You know, there's seven master spirits and 21 ancients of days. It gets spread all the way around. We see more almighty type deity manifesting in the whole grand universe, and we see more supreme type deity coming through our creator son as a master son. Remember we said he's acquired literal supreme type deity when he becomes a master son. That's why we changed his name. He has a different self. Same person, same personality, very different self. It didn't go from she to he or something like that. It went from father-son to supreme father-son type self. Okay? Right. That supreme type deity that is now loose in the finite, that wasn't liberated before, hadn't been liberated from the fetters of unqualified supremacy yet, is now liberated from the fetters of unqualified supremacy and is manifesting at large through an individual called Michael of Nebadon. So you see how the deity picture and the individuality picture coming together. You have this mother-type deity, this almighty-type deity, and this supreme-type deity, and it isn't just some amorphous ether. Okay? It manifests through individuals. Those individuals might have a very vast presence. Like the mother presence of the reflective mother spirits is the size of the super universe of Orbiton, but it's not, you know, the cosmos infinite. It's definitely part of the greater whole. It's coming through the individuality of the whole of one form or another. Or in many, you know, it might just be deity manifesting through an individuality of a part. And that's, we have one type of deity called the sevenfold, personalized God the sevenfold. When we look at it from the individuality viewpoint, we have all of these individuals, you know, including all the power beings, you know, and the countless number of Frandalanks and stuff, okay? That sevenfold type deity is manifesting out of all those different individuals. Each of them is a little light that shines that type of deity into the universe. That's something we don't talk about very much, you know, the sevenfold deity that shines out of Michael or out of the creative mother spirit or out of a Frandalank or out of, you know, a supreme power center or, you know. And it takes, you know, you can see this guy looks all, it shines seemingly differently depending on what individual it's shining through. But it's been revealed to us that it's actually one shining. Don't be deceived by the difference of how you experience it through different individuals. Behind all those individuals is one facet of deity, one flavor, pure sevenfold type deity. And that's why, despite the kaleidoscope of seeming colors that shine out of all those different individuals, they work seamlessly as one fact. Okay? They don't have to constantly micromanage each other to stay on the same page. It all works together in this beautiful whole because there's one facet of deity that binds them all together into one. Same way with the mother, you know. On all those levels, transcendental and otherwise, you have one facet of deity called the mother, and it shines through all those and coordinates them all together in one.
These Michael achievements are super universe augmentations. And you've got 100,000 Michaels operating in Orbiton. These guys are going off and popping
right
like this with this augmentation that's going to affect the whole super universe. So all the locals are getting bumped by these Michael achievements.
Right, the whole super universe has to adjust to Michael becoming a master son because he doesn't just affect things locally. Yeah. That fact affects the super universe. In terms of a personal purposive expression, and it affects the whole grand universe in terms of a power pattern expression. Every single automaton in the grand universe has to readjust to that fact, that the Almighty is now different than it was before.
You know, when you were talking about that, I was just thinking, when Michael poured out his spirit of truth on this planet, that affected all the ascenders from Urantia, from here to the super universe, for Urantia.
Mm-hmm.
Not just here, but all the ascenders are already on their way.
Right.
Even at Universa, it affected them. They could feel that change within them.
Yeah. 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 And, you know, think of the delight of those individuals that before they left Nebadon got this incredible treat that they got to experience the Creative Mother Spirit personally before they left.
Yeah. Yes.
Those that were long gone are going to have to find their way back as finaliters someday to get that experience. But there were a few that were just about ready to depart and got this incredible gift of being able to personally recognize the Creative Mother Spirit before they left. Because Michael's action brought more mother deity into expression and hence more personal purposive flavor to her presence. And they could finally, you know,
shake hands.
Yeah, feel it, you know?
Yeah.
Okay.
These sovereignty detonations.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Is it something that's kind of ramps up from being a sparse occasion to more dense, where there's closer together? You got an acceleration of
right.
Sovereignty events.
Right. So do you understand when the revelators say, we know that there's things that we can't even imagine that are going to happen, when the grand universe starts to go a little bit more geometric,
yeah.
You know, when all of these things start to become more simultaneous,
like
and
popcorn, it's accelerating, right, and it's like, right, wow, this is really popular.
Right, and it's going to have consequences that no one can extrapolate right now, you know, no one can project.
Because that's a lot of adapting. Because there's super additivity with acceleration, and wow, yeah. That's,
you know, and there's something that's left undescribed here. And what about the higher levels of the mother above the reflective mother spirits? That's going to be doing something. You know, that's something that you could contemplate. You know, how is that playing into the mix? You know, as a finaliter who's out and about in the universe, no matter what super universe you came from, the finaliters are in the womb of the creative mother agencies. I'll bet you that womb changes character, see? You know, I mean, you know that there's going to be that in-between is going to be affected because it's in-between. I mean, you affected the grand universe, at least in the power pattern. But, you know, that's all one in the Supreme Being. You know, and you affected a super universe, so you're going to affect what's in between, too, in ways that would be not allowed to be directly revealed because they're only allowed to reveal the ascension career stuff. They're not allowed to talk about, you know, the post-ascension part of the picture, you know, which is the reflective mother agency's stuff, see, so they can't talk about that directly, but you could begin to try to think about that, put those pieces together. Think about, you know, what do all the finaliters feel differently? What do they experience differently starting 2,000 years ago because our Michael became a master son?
Right.
Some finaliter over in Super Universe number 5 suddenly is having a different experience than he did before. I feel a disturbance in the force. Right?
Touched me.
Right. Yeah. See, it's going to be different. Yeah, and so, you know, suddenly maybe something that those finaliters have always wanted to do over there is now doable, and it wasn't doable before. Or, you know, it could be all kinds of consequences like that. See? Suddenly there's a relationship between two of the 7 phases, you know, that wasn't there before. And the ascension scheme now has a relationship to scheme number 1 that it wasn't there before, or, you know, who knows what. Yeah. All right. So, wow, that, okay, so we're definitely spun up now. Okay, so in that one little paragraph, I wanted to just remind everyone before we started reading that you have that whole complicated picture of mother deity, and Almighty Deity and Supreme Deity and the Supreme Being and all this stuff, the power personality synthesis, that's, you know, all those things have to sort of be in the back of your mind so that you might notice if they're sort of invoked between the lines here as we read forward. So let's start reading a little bit here.
Five, relation of master sons to the universe. The power of a master Michael is unlimited because derived from experienced association with the Paradise Trinity is unquestioned because derived from actual experience as the very creatures subject to such authority. The nature of the sovereignty of a sevenfold Creator Son is supreme because it, one, embraces the sevenfold viewpoint of Paradise Deity, two, embodies a sevenfold attitude of time-space creatures, three, perfectly synthesizes Paradise attitude and creature viewpoint.
Okay, so you can see how that list of three is just, first of all, it's reminding you of that you have this creature creator unifying thing, and you also have the power of personality synthesis. Yeah, they purposely used the synthesis word there, synthesizes. So you have all of that, just sort of being reinvoked. But they've thrown in a couple other things. Notice here, they're directly talking about power. Yeah, so we have a power personality synthesis. They're speaking to that a little bit, the power part of it. The power of a Master Michael is unlimited because derived from experienced association with the Paradise Trinity. Why? Okay, so let's see if we can answer a why question about that curious statement. Unlimited is the thing that leaps out at you. Somehow, because the Paradise Trinity is involved, it's unlimited, is what they're saying. Okay, can I understand that? Okay, the Paradise Trinity, it's a facet of deity. It's the only facet of deity that directly engages infinity. Lowercase I, the totality of reality. Yeah, unlimited. If you have a direct connection to the Paradise Trinity, you have now achieved an unlimited potential. Because that facet of deity directly engages not part of infinity, infinity, the totality of reality. So, in the sense that we're Trinity origin, what limitation can we place upon our eternity's destiny? None. We know what it is. It's the infinite, all are. It's unlimited. Yeah, that eternity, eternity's destinies. The Paradise Trinity gave us that. That potential. But notice how they tweak it. So the power of a Master Michael is unlimited because derived, it doesn't say because derived from association with the Paradise Trinity. It says experienced association. Think about that a second. Now wait a minute. The Paradise Trinity is existential deity. I can't have experienced association with existential deity. I can have coexistence with existential deity, but I can't have experienced association. Oh, what stems from the Paradise Trinity? The Mother, the overarching facet of experiential deity. See, between the lines again, see, they're ringing in the Mother. The power of a Master Michael is unlimited because derived from Mother association rooted in the Paradise Trinity. Remember, we brought that up. There was a whole bunch of times when they were stressing that in what we've read, you know, that he's coming into relationship with Mother Deity. We were just talking about it a little bit. I mean, that's the only reason that he can pour out his Spirit of Truth and it has some sort of all fleshness, in a consequence. It's because he has a relationship to Mother-type Deity so that it gets spread out over a whole womb. In fact, a whole super universe womb, not just a local universe womb. Yeah, that's... So he hit from experienced, from Mother association. Okay, and then the unquestioned part, you know, is more straightforward, that creature, you know, the very creatures subject to such authority. Okay, but I wanted to We had even more, you know, preface than I was anticipating, but that's fine. I mean, just, you know, notice in a few simple statements that seem kind of dry and factual, unless you have a little bit of living truth relationship here. And actually, they're invoking a grand, wonderful recognition there in just those few statements. The whole creature, creator, power, personality, awesome new revelation of the Paradise Trinity, all those things.
I find it interesting that they're saying that experience is unquestioned because mm-hmm. on our level of being, we do nothing but question each other's experience.
Yeah. You know, it doesn't mean that free will has been thwarted. It's unquestioned in the sense that it's unquestionable by any sane person. Yeah, it will be questioned. It's still actively being questioned by all kinds of rebel beings today. You know, you don't think that Caligastra still definitively questions this supreme sovereignty, you know, or the validity of these creature experiences? Yeah, of course, he absolutely questions them. But if you're sane, there's no denying that those, you know, he wasn't faking being a man. You know, he wasn't, you know, doing a puppet show. Okay. Jesus wasn't a hand puppet. He was a true man.
Wasn't scripted.
But what I'm talking about is amongst ourselves, especially I'm thinking young versus old, that the young come along and they do nothing but question the experience of the old.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because they themselves are inexperienced.
Mm-hmm.
And so as soon as they become experienced, then the good news is they have young people to question their experience. Mm-hmm.
And on it goes. Right. Right. I mean, and just a very, why is it just inexorable that youth will question like that? Because wisdom is only acquired through a long span of time. And once you actually have wisdom character, you can see it in others. Till that, you're blind. You're wisdom blind. When we talk about, sort of as a general back of the, sort of rule of thumb, that the age of wisdom is 40. That's why, in our Constitution, they said, you could have a little bit of a precocious person, but only say 5 years. So in order to be president, you've got to be 35. I mean, we've decided and codified it in the Constitution that there's just basically zero probability that you have any wisdom. Actual embodiment of wisdom prior to age 35, you have no right being president if you had not wisdom.
Hamilton
didn't like that. Mm-hmm. Of course, we are supposed to be reminded that, that should remind us that we're supposed to be looking for someone who has wisdom, not just someone who's old. Just because you're old doesn't mean you have wisdom either. Yeah, we're supposed to be electing someone who meets the minimum requirement of having the eyes of wisdom, not just the eyes of zeal or something. A 20-year-old has that. Yeah. But a 20-year-old doesn't have wisdom. Yeah. And of course, to get wisdom, that's a relationship to the mother, and that's taking delight in cultivating, consecrating your, we all know where that comes from. That doesn't come from consecrating your will. That doesn't get you wisdom. All right. Let's read some more.
This experiential sovereignty is thus all-inclusive of the divinity of God, the sevenfold, culminating in the supreme being. And the personal sovereignty of a sevenfold son is like the future sovereignty of the sometime-to-be-completed supreme being, embracing as it does the fullest possible content of the power and authority of the Paradise Trinity manifestable within the time-space limits concerned.
Okay, so now in that paragraph, you're seeing the stuff that we've really, really spent a whole bunch of time talking about coming out again. So let's take it slowly there. Okay, so the experiential sovereignty is thus all-inclusive of the divinity of God the sevenfold, culminating in the supreme being. So you pull out the psychic circles and the sevenfold chart so you can look at that and see if you understand that statement. It says, culminating in the Supreme Being. We're talking about the Supreme, the sevenfold creators column here. And we're just talking about the up to the Supreme Being level. I mean, yes, it brings all of this in. You know, why? Well, there's the Master Son and his relationship to Creator Mother Spirit. That's all there, just directly. Why does it bring the Ancients of Days in? Well, they mentioned that the Paradise Trinity is fundamentally involved in here. Those are Trinity origin beings, Ancients of Days. They reminded us again that it embraces a sevenfold viewpoint of Paradise Deity. That's expressed in the seven Master Spirits. So, yeah, all the way up, and we just talked about that thing we went back and read in item number 7 about him as having a new relationship to the Supreme Being. All right, so he now, you know, becomes a fully integrated part of the sevenfold. And like I've said many times, I wrote this chart with that in mind. You know, I called them Master Sons here purposely so that you can think about this state of God the sevenfold where he is a fully integrated part of the sevenfold creators, okay, rather than not yet fully plugged into God the sevenfold. Okay, so that's what they're invoking, is those sevenfold creators up to the Supreme Being. They mention, and the personal sovereignty of a sevenfold son is like the future sovereignty of the sometime-to-be-completed Supreme Being. Okay, so now we're speaking from a temporal perspective. But again, the Supreme Being, that's the power personality synthesis relative to the total finite. See, it's like that future sovereignty. He has power personality synthesis nature. Just not relative to the total finite. Okay, but he has that kind of oomph. He has power personality synthesis nature. That's the whole thing about the six great decisions, like I've mentioned several times. When Jesus goes through and makes those six great decisions prior to his public ministry, what he's deciding is to not actively, consciously, purposely manifest power personality synthesis. He's not going to show that off. He's not going to reveal God the Supreme. He's going to stick with revealing God the Father. So it's just the will of the Father. It's a personal sort of expression, okay? Spiritual uplifter. He's not going to do the power personality synthesis thing. But he is a power personality synthesis. He literally embodies that. He can't change that fact. Can't literally just turn it off. You can choose not to actively manifest it, but he can't turn it off. So occasionally, when someone would genuinely lock into him personally, you can't just lock into him personally anymore. When you grab him personally, you grab the power personality synthesis. Power is hyphenated onto personality now in him. I feel power, has left me. Proof that someone actually was more than a self in my presence. Someone actually manifested personal character in my presence instead of just a bunch of clamoring self wanting to be fed and healed. Okay? I mean, it didn't happen much. In other words, it's sad to record that almost no one that walked up to him manifested any personal nature at all. They're just selves groping in the dark. But every once in a while, there was a genuine faith grasp, a genuine personal fact that touched him, and that sucks power too. Okay. right. So, reminding you of that, and then just embracing as it does the fullest possible content of the power and authority of the Paradise Trinity, manifestable within the time space limits concerned. And we've talked about that. I mean, we have these limitations on this. And one way that his manifestation of supreme type deity through him is very circumscribed you know, that's really localized to the local universe. The mother part is super universe, but the supreme part is, you know, he doesn't become sovereign of other super other local universes in the super universe. See, so that's quite time-space limited, as they're saying there, see? But it's complicated. There's all these different things with different ranges of limitation, and some that are not very limited at all, like the almighty part that we were talking about.
It sure seems like these sovereignty events are going to influence other sovereignty events.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's sovereignty walk is going to be modulated by sovereignties that happened.
Right. Yeah. All right. And there's... So no two can be fully independent. The only one that was, you know, was the first one. You know, stood on its own. But you know, after that, the second one stood on the first one, and the third one stood on the first two, and yeah, et cetera. And of course, even the first one stood upon the firstborn Michael's fact in the central universe.
Right.
Yeah. So. All right. So. So there you have it. I mean, that's the, you know, we made a lot out of that. I mean, but that's fine. I hope maybe you have a little bit better feel for just what the revelation is really demanding us when we try to think about what they're revealing here. It's so not anthropomorphically understandable. I mean, it's just very, just all-encompassing phenomenon that you have to be able to think about to understand what's going on here. You just can't circumscribe it and have any understanding. You got to allow yourself to take delight in cultivating a relationship with the whole, the revelation, for instance. All right.
With the achievement of supreme local universe sovereignty, there passes from a Michael son the power and opportunity to create entirely new types of creature beings during the present universe age. But a master son's loss of power to originate entirely new orders of beings is in no way interferes with the work of life elaboration already established and in process of unfoldment. This vast program of universe evolution goes on without interruption or curtailment. The acquirement of supreme sovereignty by a master son implies the responsibility of personal devotion to the fostering and the administering of that which has already been designed and created, and of that which will subsequently be produced by those who have been thus designed and created. In time, there may develop an almost endless evolution of diverse beings, but no entirely new pattern or type of intelligent creature will henceforth take direct origin from a master son. This is the first step, the beginning of a settled administration in any local universe.
And you can, you know, it should be very obvious after us talking about this. I mean, he just can't do that anymore because he can't just do the personality thing. It inexorably is a power personality thing if he tries to do that now, and that's going to produce transcendental facts. And this is the finite age. So he has to self-limit. You know, and you notice they brought in that personal responsibility and, of course, self-control is not far behind. You know, the moment you think about personal responsibility, you see he has to exercise a lot of self-control, just like he was doing with the six decisions. He's exercising, he has a personal responsibility to not do that, and he's going to control his self so that it doesn't do that to the best of his abilities. You know, the very fact that he can't absolutely control it, you know, you knew he wasn't going to hang around for very long because he's kind of playing with fire the longer he stays.
Yeah.
You know? So he's going to do it for just a little while, and then he needs to get out of there because, you know, it's just going to become inevitable that something is going to happen that shouldn't happen yet. And, you know, you get the sense that, you know, it may not be highly common that a bestowal creator son stays.
Yeah.
You know, after death. You know, that whole rigmarole of having to bring the whole Maranchus thing from the mansion worlds to here. you know, so that he could do the whole Imagine World phenomenon here. I mean, the logistics of that was ridiculous. You know, it's probably not too common, you know, that this even comes into play, that they have to decide to not manifest God the Supreme. But, you know, there may be Master-Sons that's what's best. There may be worlds where a Master-Son stayed after his resurrection and did some supreme things, you know, let alone doing some supreme things after fusion, you know, which, of course, is a sixth great decision thing, you know. I mean, he's not thinking about post-resurrection, but just, you know, public ministry about that, about constraining that power personality synthesis. So, you know, you can have some worlds where some amazing finger snaps occurred, you know, and that creator son, that master son decided, you know, we're just going to fix all of this. You know, let it be whole. Boom.
Yeah,
boom. Yeah. You know, he could have just thought something and, you know, the planet would have turned into an architectural sphere. Yeah. So.
Even the limited manifestation that he did has caused all kinds of problems.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, in a non-rebellion sovereignty event, what kind of latitude, what kind of range would they...
Yeah, what would be right for, you know...
Well, we would have had a magisterial son,
You'd think that if they're going to do something pretty grand, you'd need really stable mortals to do it in the midst of.
Definitely.
You know, we couldn't even stably handle Adam and Eve showing up, you know. I mean, so, all right, let's get some more here.
The elevation of a sevenfold bestowal son to the unquestioned sovereignty of his universe means the beginning of the end of age-long uncertainty and relative confusion. Subsequent to this event, that which cannot be sometime spiritualized will eventually be disorganized. That which cannot be sometime coordinated with cosmic reality will eventually be destroyed. When the provisions of endless mercy and nameless patience have been exhausted in an effort to win the loyalty and devotion of the will creatures of the realms, justice and righteousness will prevail. That which mercy cannot rehabilitate, justice will eventually annihilate.
Okay. Binary.
Yeah. Before we get into the binary discussion, let's note one little kind of between the lines there. The evolution of a sevenfold bestowal son to the unquestioned sovereignty of his universe means the beginning of the end of age-long uncertainty and relative confusion. It's like, well, God wouldn't allow very long spans of uncertainty and confusion, would he? That's not Havona-like. I mean, that's an affront to my idealism. How long is that age long? What are we talking about there? How many years? 300 billion years. Right? 300 billion years of uncertainty and confusion finally came to an end 2,000 years ago. Just let that sink in.
I thought our worlds dated to 200 billion years.
200 billion is when the first hemisphere, but Michael and the uncertainty and confusion began 300 billion years ago. And, right.
When things happened.
Right. And the difference between 300 billion and 200 billion in this instance is really a difference of no consequence. Right. I mean, just let that sink in. What does patience mean? Okay. How ridiculous are the most spiritual people on this planet's thoughts that they want something grand now? I mean, it's so ridiculous. The comparison of that to truth. Okay.
How after you arrived at 300 billion?
That's when Michael and crew came out from paradise and set up shop 300 billion years ago.
How did you arrive that that's an age?
Well, just
300 billion is
an
age.
Well, that's not, no. It's just, you know, there's been an age-long bit of uncertainty. What, you know, what? How long has that been for us? That's just how long has the local universe been in existence?
I get a feeling like, you know, playtime's over. That's what I get.
Right. Okay. Now we're going to get to that. Yes. Right. Now we're going to get to the rest of it. Right. Where playtime is. Let's do the last thing first. The last will be first. That which mercy cannot rehabilitate, justice will eventually annihilate. Okay, so let's take care of the very personal part of this playtime is over. You know, we're talking about the executioners of the ancients of days, for instance, there. Okay. Okay. When you're saying mercy and justice, you know, that's, you're talking basically individual, you know, this is a personal fact. Remember what we saw invoked between the lines when they said King of Kings and Lord of Lords. That's the battle hymn of the Republic. Okay? Trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. You know, loose the fateful lightning of his terrible swift sword. They invoked that just a couple sections back. Okay? And here they're bringing it up again. I mean, there's supreme sovereignty now in play. So foolishness comes to an end now at some point, okay? And individuals will be taken care of in the binary way. You know, there's eternity or oblivion. So that's that last sentence. You know, look in the middle of the paragraph there and think about some of those. Subsequent to this event, that which cannot be sometimes spiritualized will eventually be disorganized. Let's kind of stick on the close to home theme. I mean, an example is this material body in itself. Okay, it cannot, even in any long eventually, be spiritualized. That's why it dies and is disorganized. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. It is not spiritizable, let's just say it directly like that, you know, let alone spiritualizable. Okay, that's why it dies. There is no exaltation except a false one of this mortal self. It's mortal. It's not. It can't be spiritualized, so it will be disorganized. So you see it even before, you know, that's something that's been happening for a long time. So that's a little lesson. What you have experienced as an individual for a long time, humans have always been mortal and have died and have gone ashes to ashes, dust to dust, that's now being universalized. Everything is going to come under that. If in the long scheme of things, Jupiter can't be spiritualized, it will be disorganized. Okay? If a star can't be spiritualized, it will be disorganized. Okay? So those kind of things come into play, and everything in between. That which cannot be sometime coordinated, there's that mother word, you know, in other words, it's not going to be upheld by the mother, that which cannot be sometime coordinated with cosmic reality will eventually be destroyed. Ooh, the words are getting harsh. Okay, what's an example of that? There are beings on this planet with cultural traditions. You know, we're taking out of the individual salvation thing and individual judgment. But there are lines of beings, you know, who, you know, they're lines, they procreate, they go on and on, who are fundamentally not civilizable. Okay. They cannot be even sometime coordinated. We have supreme sovereignty in play now. One of these days, they will be destroyed. Okay. And it didn't say eliminated by attrition. Notice the word. See, like I said, I mean, they reminded you that. when they've said King of Kings and Lord of Lords. I mean, the foolishness will come to an end at some point. You know, those people on this planet who are just fundamentally uncivilizable, I mean, in the midst of all the glory and beauty of the bestowal of the Spirit of Truth and the universal bestowal of thought adjusters, the flip side is, the other side of the blade is this. One day that's going to come to an end with prejudice. And it's just, this is not something that we thought we had graduated from those immature notions of in the Bible, you know, about these sorts of events. No, the fifth epical revelation makes it worse. You know, it now is not just what appears to be a fairy tale in a book written by, you know, we know it was written by a bunch of guys. Okay? This is in the fifth epical revelation that these are the angels of the trumpets and King of Kings and Lord of Lords. I mean, this is in play. It wasn't in play before he was a master son. So becoming a master son has all these wonderful things, but it has this other side. That eventually these foolish, uncosmic things must come to an end. Because we can't get to light and life. Those of us who desire light and life, we can't get there, no matter how hard we try, while there's things that the mother can't uphold on this planet. They will be dropped. You know, lest I withdraw my hand. Yeah. You know, the way that's expressed. Right. Or until the Most High is a rule and the kingdoms of men will destroy. It's that whole side of things. The Verondadec observer, the father thing. Again, pray for the mother's hand. It may be long in, you know, to manifest, but it's oh so much more easy for your spiritual consciousness to deal with. Be careful what you ask for the Father's intervention. The Most High's, that's the Father's hand, and they don't care about the individuals. Even though he's slay me, yet while I serve him comes into play if you actually get them to start acting. You could get caught in a crossfire. You won't get caught in any crossfire with the mother, her evolutionary hand. But the father's hand is, you know, the way of the transgressor is hard. So, like Gene was saying, just appreciate how every once in a while you come across a paragraph like this. You need to challenge yourself to let that be. Trust God enough to let that be a fact. That sometimes some amazingly direct measures are taken to get the ball rolling again. You know, when they talk about retrieving a world, that's, I'm right reminding you, that's often part of the retrieving, is a cleaving, so that those that are retrievable can be retrieved. There are those that are not retrievable.
And by that, are you talking about not only just degenerate stocks and people that are mentally defective, but segments of society that stubbornly will not give up their erroneous ideas? Is that what you're talking
right,
about?
Right, yeah. We're talking about civilization, not individuals. You know, I mean, as individuals, they'll all get resurrected on the mansion worlds and probably go forward fine. But they are an affront to the future of civilization. You got to get them off this planet. They're a boat anchor to the whole.
We'll never achieve light and life.
We'll never get to light and life with uncivilizable stocks on the planet.
That's
the thing. It's two separate things. That's very important. Remember, that's one of the things that the fifth epical revelation is trying to get us to do, to separate the individual phenomenon from the civilizational question. Okay, I mean, I can spend every waking moment of my life unwittingly fostering the Lucifer rebellion or being a hopeless hopelessly uncivilizable person. Just completely unsocializable, you know, just an anathema to mankind. But because it's post-Pentecost, I get resurrected on the first mansion world and go on. And I get a lot of help, and there might be a future for me. You know, the only way the annihilation thing is going to come in, you know, if the mercy won't be able to rehabilitate, is if I'm starting to actively choose. And it's not, you know, I go beyond unwittingly fostering the Lucifer rebellion, for instance. I start wittingly intentionally fostering the Lucifer. Okay, then that the annihilation thing comes into play. But so set that aside, you know. The problem is we've got a whole bunch of people that unwittingly, like, you know, many modern religionists are unwitting secularists. It's the unwitting thing that has created an emergency for civilization. We don't have an individual emergency. Armageddon can't be about individuals anymore, because Michael changed that 2,000 years ago. There is no possibility for that anymore. So you have to let go of that individual interpretation of quote-unquote Armageddon, you know, of some sort of heavy-handed act. It's not about individuals. It's about the civilization. That's what the fifth epical revelation is trying to get us to think about, to go beyond worrying about ourselves and our judgment, and worrying about the future light and life potential of this planet. There's an emergency right now. Unless something changes, the whole process of unfolding towards light and life is not in eternal jeopardy or something, you know, but it's in extreme temporal jeopardy, you know. It could really mess things up. And either we start taking delight in cultivating so that the mother can get a hold of us and we can begin to fix this problem evolutionarily, with a few God-conscious citizens beginning to seed an advancing civilization, you know, having true monogamy, you know, true religion, true monogamy, prayer, and God consciousness in play. Or
interregnum.
There's going to be an interregnum or a Most High Regent. Okay? And because Most High Regents in the wake of 2,000 years ago could be much harsher than Most High Regents prior to 2,000 years ago, because now there's supreme sovereignty that can be expressed. See, that's the thing they're trying to get us to remind of. You know, before it was just vicegerent of the Universal Father, and that can only go so far. Now now the power of a Master Michael is unlimited.
Remember what?
If 99% of mankind need to be exterminated, they will be.
It's like Daniel told Michael when he's getting ready to leave with his gold. There will be no. It will be dealt with instantaneously. Yeah.
What percentage of the species died off in the Permian extinction? Now, you know, almost all of them. The mother withdrew her hand from almost everything on the planet, and it, you know, except for just a handful of species, everything died off. I mean, you know, there was a harsh cleansing there of the system, because it couldn't go forward with all of that baggage. You know, and on a decimal world, it was extreme baggage in Permian times.
I was thinking about the different time when they had the battle, when right before the Sangiks and that,
no,
there were 100 people left.
This is, yeah.
Yeah, way before.
Yeah, yeah.
I always wondered what you call that. What do you call it, that battle that the Andonites had, that there was only 100 left, and out of that final, that's where the Sangiks
the
were born.
Anyway,
yeah.
Yeah.
That was an ethnic cleansing there, yes. All right, so anyway, so just, you know, and we you could, you know, think of your own examples, you know, different ways to understand, you know, that that which cannot sometimes be spiritualized will eventually be disorganized. You know, what are examples of that? You know, what are examples of the destroyed? What are examples of the annihilated? You've got three different things there. All that are unlimitedly in play now because of supreme sovereignty. So there's just no revelator would dare would presume to limit what actions could be taken. You know, and our initial sunshine and lollipops consciousness, you know, is thinking, you know, someone's going to wave a magic wand and guns will be turned into daisies. No, it could be daisies are turned into guns. Okay? It could go either way. You can't limit it. So.
There's an interesting commentary in the paper the other day about using so many violent, using violence in films as a means of entertainment. And, the thought of, well, I guess that's it. Using violence, extreme violence.
Right. Bread and circuses.
What?
Bread and circuses, you know.
For entertainment, just where is that getting us?
Yeah.
As a
well, it's one of those telltale signs. You know, go back at the end of the book and read that paragraph about what things brought about the fall of Rome. It's a sobering list. It's like, wait a minute. Most of that list is in the world around me today. And not surprisingly, another thing of Rome, you know, the Colosseum and blood sport is becoming more and more. It's the civilization is slipping. You know, and animalistic phenomena are beginning to be more and more at large. Yeah, it just, right, things are slipping.
It's, again, I hate to simplify, but the one way that to truly take the pulse of the culture is to turn that freaking box on, television.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what's on the television. Mm-hmm. Look at what is on the television. Mm-hmm. That is what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That is everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, not only movies, but the television, the thing, it's not good.
It's all losing its cosmic quality.
There is no cosmic quality.
I mean,
man. It's debased and it's sinking like a stone.
Right.
And it's very spooky when you look at it because that is the pulse.
Yeah. And just notice, you know, not in fear, not in panic, but notice with sobering clarity that it's not descending arithmetically. It was for a few decades.
Now it is sinking like a rock.
It's not, you know, a delusion on our parts, that, you know, and a grand self-aggrandizement that we declare this to be an emergency revelation because we want to, you know, see ourselves as somehow special or something. No, it's just a fact. The long age of winter decline is past, and the springtime of either quivering on the very brink of going up or quivering on the very brink of going down very rapidly is upon us. We've sailed out of the sheltered bays, you know, and you know, you either make it to the other side or you die in the high seas.
The things that we view on the television take on value in the current culture, especially the young culture.
So
they're becoming valuable.
Yeah. So
I've always called it the leading edge of social change, and it isn't good change necessarily. Can be either way.
All right, let's read some more here. Oh, you got one more? Yep.
I think we're gonna make it to the end. We're not gonna make it.
We'll make it through this section, and then we gotta quit. Yep.
Why nameless patients?
Oh, sure. You know, that means that it's indescribable. I mean, you know, you can get some sense of what kind of mercy you're talking about by calling it endless, but there is no adjective that suits the kind of patience we're talking about. I tried to stress that, at the beginning there, age long. Okay, we're not talking about 100 years here, which is what everyone in the room here, including myself, thinks is a long time. It's like, well, I've waited for 100 years. How much more do you think I'm supposed to wait? Adam and Eve could only do it for 100 years, and they gave up. No, 300 billion years. Okay.
Did it say that's an age, then?
No. Don't take it technically. It's just an expression. It's a long time. Okay. Now, okay, just quickly. What kind of times are normally involved, you know, in the planetary mortal epochs? Okay, the first, you know, from post-planetary prince, 500,000 years. Post-Adamic, 25,000 years. Post-magisterial sun, who remembers?
10,000.
No, 25 to 50. Post-bestowal sun, 10 to 100,000 years. Yeah. Even the Trinity teacher sun is minimum 1,000. I mean, you know, Adam and Eve came with a 25,000-year plan, and they made it 100 years.
That's despicable.
Okay? That's called the kind of impatience that you are made with, and you need to take that on. There's some personal responsibility and some self-control that needs to be exercised here. If you don't, you'll last 100 years, and you'll fail. Just like Adam and Eve did. And they started slipping on day one. They actually didn't even make it one day. They were slipping by the end of the first day.
So
long. Okay.
What's your example of that?
What was that?
What's your example of that?
Just a recital. We talked about the first day they were here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just read the description of the first day. They're already starting to lose it.
Already a riot.
Yeah.
Call out the fan doors.
Yeah, well, that's not till the seventh day. But but yeah, and it's just right away they were starting to, you know, to take their eyes off of the cosmos and off of God, and they're starting, and they were starting to turn their eyes to their belly buttons. And
because they couldn't hear the universe broadcast, so they realize, you know, that's where we live.
Right, and so they decide they're all alone. It's like, you're all alone? Think about the number of beings that just came with them, besides the ones that were there. I mean, they had the whole, they had 12 Melchizedeks and all of those, you know, beings. They had a gigantic collection of angels that came with them. I mean, they were so not alone, it's ridiculous. But instantly, they're choosing to be alone in the midst of plenty. Mortals aren't used to the orgy of darkness and death either. But how many mortals say, "I am so alone, no one cares"?
Millions.
A fragment of the infinite dwells within your mind. Okay. And you're alone? Okay. I mean, don't do what Adam and Eve did. Okay. Yeah. You're not alone. Choose to know that. Okay. It's a choice. Everything is a choice. If you don't choose, you fail. There's no free ride. You've got to choose. And on day one, Adam and Eve stopped choosing, and they began to fail. Yeah. Oh, sure, yeah. But doesn't change the fact that they failed.
And here we are.
Okay.
That's why we have so much mercy, because they know if they failed, look at us, poor mortals. You know, we have nothing, and we...
Straight jacket be damned.
But that which mercy cannot rehabilitate...
will annihilate.
Justice will eventually annihilate. Okay, let's read some more.
The Master Michaels are supreme in their own local universes when once they have been installed as sovereign rulers. The few limitations upon their rule are those inherent in the cosmic preexistence of certain forces and personalities. Otherwise, these Master Sons are supreme in authority, responsibility, and administrative power in their respective universes. They are as creators and gods, supreme in virtually all things. There is no penetration beyond their wisdom regarding the functioning of a given universe. After his elevation to settled sovereignty in a local universe, a paradise Michael is in full control of all other sons of God functioning in his domain, and he may freely rule in accordance with his concept of the needs of his realms. A master son may at will vary the order of the spiritual adjudication and evolutionary adjustment of the inhabited planets. And such sons do make and carry out the plans of their own choosing in all matters of special planetary needs, in particular regarding the worlds of their creature sojourn, and still more concerning the realm of terminal bestowal, the planet of incarnation, in the likeness of mortal flesh.
Who are they talking to?
You know, and we know that this, you know, is indeed the wild card world now.
That's,
I mean,
a compound statement they made.
You think he's already juggled the order. It's like, well, he could do it even more. There's no telling what he could do. And we've talked about that. It's unlimited, the speculation. There's no way to limit it. No one knows. There's no means by which you can say, well, that absolutely could not happen. You know, so who knows what could happen. But don't forget that no matter what he does, it has to be of a character that it equals that the sum of all those spans of time that I rattled off. You know? It's not some little trick that he's gonna, I mean, if he does it in quicker fashion, he's gotta do something that is equivalent to what, say, 100,000 years of evolution would produce.
Right.
You know, which we can't even imagine what that much, produces. So, you've got a choice. You know, is he going to just like do something really, really huge, bigger than we can imagine, or just some smaller things and make it all happen in 10,000 years? You know, instead of 500,000 plus 25,000 plus 25,000 plus 10,000. but it's got to. It's just like normally you got to do third circular to get an adjuster. Or something equivalent to that magnitude. Not something lesser will get you an adjuster, something of equivalent magnitude. You know, so just always look at the very definitively temporal thing to get a sense of how big a thing you're talking about. You know, when they talk about a supreme decision, being able to do something. Okay.
The Master Sons seem to be in perfect communication with their bestowal worlds, not only the worlds of their personal sojourn, but all worlds whereon a magisterial son has bestowed himself. This contact is maintained by their own spiritual presence, the spirit of truth, which they are able to pour out upon all flesh. These master sons also maintain an unbroken connection with the eternal mother son at the center of all things. They possess a sympathetic reach which extends from the universal father on high to the lowly races of planetary life in the realms of time.
Why did they call him the eternal mother son? This distinction is vital. For in a cosmic system, even that master son is not connected to the eternal son except through the mother. Really reminding you of that. Okay, so we'll finish up this paper then next time and roll over into the not yet extensively discussed type of sun, the Trinitized ones.
Maybe.
but that was great. That was, thank you for letting it play out for kind of lengthy, and I think that was good to talk about some of those things that much. I mean, we need to all just really start to come to terms with what we're trying to do here. We're trying to really, really fundamentally challenge the way we've always thought about everything. And we're going to like the reformed self that we get. It's going to think better about everything. And so don't be afraid to just, let go of all that old ways of thinking about things. No matter how well they seem to have served you, there's always something that can serve you better. And you'll delight that you had the courage to let go and be improved. All right, let's take a moment here.